WFORadio.com presents NHRA Nitro.
I'm Joe Costello, and this is WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. A weekly look inside the baddest motorsport in the world, NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing.
It's side by side, it's competition, and it's who wins, and then the chair of the crowd.
Join me as we go WFO with the stars of drag racing.
Hey, I'm Bob Tasca.
I'm Tony Schumacher.
Hey, you're with Matt Hagen.
Hey, this is Ron Capps, Matt Hagen's personal friend. You're on WFO.
NHRA track announcer Alan Reinhart stops by each week to break down each race and answer your email questions.
I mean, the Nitro cars put on a tremendous show. They're otherworldly machines. But for people that are really interested in cars, I mean, you wander through the Superstock pits, and if you're wondering why you don't see 69 Camaros running around on the street anymore, it's because they're all out there in the stock and Superstock pits.
Racing fans from around the globe, it's time to go WFO with Joe Costello.
WFO Radio. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. One more time here on WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro. We'll actually go a couple more times where the NHRA season never ends, ever. And if you spend a little time with the WFO Radio archive, you can go back and hear the entire season. But we keep it rolling. Following up PRI, we're going to talk about the Performance Racing Industry Trade Show with Alan Reinhart just moments from now. And also on the show, Brad Plord, two-time U.S. Nationals winner, won this past year in Stock Eliminator. Alan calls him the Brad. Well, the Brad is going to be on the show here on WFO Radio. Also on the show, we spoke about him last week kind of casually. Next thing you know, we're getting emails from listeners. They want to hear from Bob Wilbur. What's going on behind the scenes at Wilkerson Racing? Tell us about the baseball game. Sure enough, we can do it. You want it? You got it. Bob Wilbur going to be on this show. But the big event from this past week was the Performance Racing Industry Trade Show, PRI, back in Indianapolis, Indiana, and Alan Reinhart was there. Alan, welcome back.
Joe, great to be back. And when I say back, I mean back in Arizona, where it's not cold.
Yes, you sound like you're still thawing out.
It was a terrific show, and obviously, you know, Indianapolis is the center of racing, certainly in the United States or North America, but I am definitely a bigger fan of Orlando weather than I am Indianapolis weather. It was a terrific show, however.
From what I understand, and as I mentioned last week, I came down with a flu-like bug that forced me to make a quick decision, and I just decided, you know what, if this thing goes downhill, it would be really bad to be in 15-degree weather. So I followed on the Internet. I followed people on Twitter. I was watching some of the photographs. It looked huge, and from the accounts that I've gotten, a lot of productivity as well.
Well, there certainly was that. You know, having everybody back under one roof was a big deal. There were a couple of really noticeable absences, I thought, but, you know, overall it seemed like it was a pretty good show for everybody, and I was pretty fortunate. One of the great things about Indianapolis, and, you know, I've talked about it before, if you go back and listen to U.S. national shows and stuff, I really like the town of Indy, and I think downtown Indianapolis might be the best downtown in the United States. I mean, it's right up there anyway, but downtown, they have a lot of interconnected stuff through the skywalks, so you really don't have to go outside. You know, Thursday, I think the high temperature was 13, but from the hotel I was staying, I could walk through the skywalk straight into the convention center, never had to go outside, and that certainly makes it easier on somebody like me. It's also kind of interesting from a vendor standpoint. You know, I always thought there was a lot of guys that would use Orlando as an excuse. You know, you could take the family with you and go on and make a vacation out of it while you're going to the trade show. But from a vendor standpoint, if it's cold, it's snowy, and there's nothing to do outside, then you're almost forced to go to the trade show, and you spend a little more time on the floor. So, you know, there's an argument can be made for either side of it. But everybody under one roof was pretty cool. You know, PRI back in Indy was pretty cool, and the city, you know, just did a terrific job playing host, as they always do, if they could just fix the weather.
Yeah, exactly. We got to get them to work on that. Some of us do. I'm sure there are people coming from north of Indiana that were saying, hey, this isn't so bad. No?
Yeah, that's a fact. And there were, you know, there were also a number of people. It's interesting talking to Top Fuel Alan Johnson, who obviously manufactures a whole lot of components for a lot of different people. Well, a big part of his business are the guys that do the tractor pulling, which are all based basically in the Midwest. And for a number of them, Indianapolis is a pretty easy deal. You know, it's a 2 or 3 hour drive from wherever, and you can come in for the day, you can go through the show, you can see the vendors you need to see, and head back out, and they certainly couldn't do that in Orlando. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that Alan and his, you know, Alan Johnson Performance Engineering was always a staple at IMIS. They, after IMIS started, they never went back to Florida because more of his customers are based in the Midwest, and he figured, hey, the Top Fuel guys all know where I am. They call me. But for the guys that I need to see and shake hands with and talk to, they're based in the Midwest, and so, you know, by all accounts, it was a tremendous success. The crowds were terrific. Again, the, you know, all of the vendors under one roof was a pretty nice deal, and, you know, everybody seemed to have positive things to say about it.
Did the show take on a noticeable sprint car, you know, atmosphere, just because that area is very sprint car racing intensive with so many short tracks and dirt tracks and just everything coming out of that? Was the balance of racing any different than it was in Orlando?
Oh, the balance was certainly different. You know, and again, just everybody being under one roof. Last year, I went to both shows. I went to PRI in Orlando, and then I went to IMIS, which was the show that was based in Indy. And the Indianapolis show was probably 75% geared to the left turn guys. And, you know, there was a little bit of everything in Orlando, but in Indy, certainly the, you know, the dirt track guys, the short track guys, the, you know, even the asphalt guys, but just the short track Midwest racers were certainly well represented at Indy. Well, they were still all there, but it's just now everybody else was there as well. If you had a business in racing, or if you had a question that needed to be answered in racing, there was somebody there that could answer the question for you, that could take care of it. Everybody was there. So, great deal.
I saw a press release from R2B2 that they were going to debut a new style chassis that was going to save a lot of weight. It was going to work better. It was going to do everything. It was a big evolutionary step. Did you get a chance to see or find out anything about that?
I did stop by the R2B2 booth and chatted with the guys a little bit, just kind of took a glance at it. You know, it's interesting. Unless you are in the chassis business, it's tough to tell a real difference between one bare chassis and another, other than, you know, the little different design. And I know they were talking about integrating some different materials and doing some stuff. But, you know, the R2B2 guys for, what, 8 years now have been really innovators in the pro mod world, and they continue to do so out of their shop down in Georgia.
Very, very cool. And as I said, I think Competition Plus has got a good video of just the photographs of the booths and the booth babes and everything that was going on. So congratulations, obviously, to PRI on another great show. And Alan has made it back, and he's warm and still on the right side of the terra firma. So that is all good. That is all good, Alan. You made it.
Oh, yeah. It was it was definitely worth going. The seminar that I went back and
yeah, how'd the seminar go?
It was interesting. You know, it was a panel that was focused on, you know, the kind of the behind-the-scenes business, a little bit of drag racing. We talked a little bit about environmental issues, about insurance issues, about some sponsor stuff. You know, it wasn't ticket prices and payouts and car counts. It was, you know, how do you make sure that all of the behind-the-scenes business is taken care of? We had Scott Gardner, the president, new president of the IHRA, was there. Steve from NMCA and NMRA. Kenny Nowling was supposed to be there, but last minute he had something come up and couldn't make it. But Mel Roth, who runs the West Coast PSCA Association, was there. And also Pete Biondo, talking about, you know, he and Kyle had just put on some big-dollar bracket races. But it was kind of interesting, some of the challenges that, you know, everybody from the president of IHRA to a guy that puts on a couple of big-dollar bracket races a year all have to deal with and go through, just to make sure that the events are successful and keep them profitable. So it was a very interesting discussion.
Got a couple of great guests on the show. Kind of interesting. We spoke about Bob Wilbur last week, and next thing you know, a couple of emails came through. You had actually forwarded that story about the greatest baseball team no one ever knew. We put it on our Facebook page. Next thing you know, the requests are flooding in for Bob, and we got Bob on the show.
I think that's awesome. Bob is a fascinating guy, and you know, the life that he's led and some of the things that he's done. And, you know, anybody that went and read that story, if you go back and read any of Bob's other stories, I mean, some of the stuff about, you know, him being a scout down in Mexico, you know, driving in hotel to hotel, and you didn't have internet, you didn't have cell phones, and you get lost on the back roads, and just some of the things he's done. He's a fascinating guy, and I'm really looking forward to what he has to say. You know, Brad Plourde has been very strong for so many years. You know, obviously his dad, Bernie, who raced alcohol cars out of the Northeast for a number of years, and that's what got him started in the thing. I think it's interesting that he's won Indy twice and borrowed cars both times. He's never won his own cars.
Yes, that is, there's something going on there. I'm going to ask him about it, but you would have to think there's a heightened, an extra heightened level of sensitivity or something when you're in the borrowed car. There's got to be something.
Well, you know, he's had tremendous success in his own cars, too. So, but, no, you know, it might just be something that, you know, it's one less thing that you're worried about if it's not your car. You just go, you know what, hey, nobody's expecting much. Let's just go out and, you know, have at it kind of thing. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he's obviously been in good cars. I mean, one of them was a Coughlin car, and the car he raced last year won stock in is a car that had won at Englishtown earlier in the season. So, no, he's just, you know, a really good guy, a really down-to-earth guy. You know, travels the country for years and years. It was just him and Sadie, who was his puppy, and you know, now married, making his home down in Alabama, and still racing for a living. Good guy, really good guy.
And Twitter is the way we connected. Just I was doing some things on the WFO Radio Twitter account that hopefully everybody is following, and we got chatting back and forth, and it's like, we got to get you on the show, and he's like, yeah, and I was like, how about this week, and he's like, yeah, and here we are. So it's going to be great, and this is something that a lot of the listeners have really been requesting, more in-depth time spent with some of the Lucas Oil Series racers that are out there putting their lives into it, really chasing the dream out there and having success.
You know, I think the biggest thing is just you finding the time and being able to do it. And obviously during the off-season we have some more time, and we don't have, you know, winter commitments, or you don't have winter commitments, you know, every national event weekend. But, you know, there's a number of great stories out there. There's a number of great guys out there. And again, one of the great things about the PRI show, you know, I know Tommy Phillips fairly well. You know, I've seen him at a number of races. He's obviously had a lot of success over the years, but catching up with him at the K&N booth and being able to spend 15, 20 minutes just one-on-one in conversation with the guy, I mean, obviously a hardcore racer, and that's what everybody knows, but fascinating guy, good family guy, and just enjoying life. And there's, you know, there's a million of those stories out there.
Absolutely. And this one just in. Actually, Alan, you mentioned time. We've got a couple of questions for you. Do you think we have time?
Oh, gee, I hope not.
I'm looking at the clock. The clock says yes.
All right, let's go.
This,
you know,
one
my
from,
favorite part of the show every week.
Well, this one literally is a this just in from Ed. Just popped up on my email, which I have open. It says, question for Alan. I had the best time at the Phoenix race last year, poker at the Wild Horse Pass Casino, Major League Baseball spring training, golf, good weather, and great racing. Erica won, and he's from Houston. The track facilities were just average, however. What improvements will I see at WHP Raceway this year? Thanks, Alan, says Ed.
Well, you know, my answer is basically going to be what I've found out from being online. You know, I've driven past and stuck my head in a couple of times when I've been in Phoenix, but that place is, you know, it's 100 miles away, so I don't drive by it every day. You know, they've talked about resurfacing. They're going to do, you know, new timing system and some other upgrades like that. As far as the fan amenities, you know, I'm not 100% sure. And, you know, I always find it interesting. You know, obviously Firebird has been on the schedule for a while. It's, you know, a track that's got a lot of tenure out there. If you compare it to Charlotte, okay, I'll grant you it's not as shiny, it's not, but from a fan standpoint, you can park right next to the racetrack. So if you want to run out to your car in between rounds, you know, grab a sandwich, keep an ice chest out there, that's not a problem. They have plenty of shade, they have plenty of concrete pavilion space. You know, you walk down what is Pro Row at Phoenix is literally right alongside what used to be Firebird Lake out there. And I've always wondered what people, you know, I heard a lot of people that talk about, you know, well, we don't like this racetrack or we don't like that racetrack. And it's like, why? And nobody can ever seem to put their finger on it. And, you know, okay, I'll grant you, Phoenix is not Charlotte. Phoenix is not Bristol. But it's a nice little racetrack. We've seen records set there. We've seen great performances there. And, you know, everybody pits on asphalt. You know, you don't have the grass. You don't have the mud problems that you have at some other racetracks. And I think guys get spoiled pretty easily. You know, if you go down to the new, what is it, AT&T Stadium, I think, where the Cowboys play, and then are you going to go to Chicago or go to Lambeau Field and go, well, this place is a dump just because it's not that nice and shiny? I don't believe so. I think that, you know, the older tracks that have the personality, that have been around for a while, and Firebird really is a pretty fan-friendly place. You know, I've always wondered what people really don't like about it.
I went there for my first and only time this past year. I had 104 fever and flu, and so it was difficult. But I found a way to have a good time. I walked the pits a couple of times, and I get what you are saying. You know me, I'm big about bathrooms and fan amenities, but I didn't get to experience much of that. I do know the view from the track announcer's booth is one of the best. I loved being you're hovering over the cars practically.
And you know, that's it. Each one of the tracks has their own personality, and, you know, they're all a little bit different. But, you know, I had a conversation with Jim Head a couple of years ago. Actually, I guess it was last beginning of last season when they were talking about the fact that, hey, this, you know, Firebird might be going away, might be staying, going to be changing ownership, changing. And, you know, he made the comment, well, they ought to start with a bulldozer. And I said, well, what's wrong with the place? And after about a 20-minute conversation, the only thing that he could come up with that he really hated was where the pro cars come out of the upper level, and there's kind of a little bottleneck there where they come through and get into the staging lanes, going through the midway. And, Joe, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
You've been there, a lot of people. And that was the only thing that he really, he said, well, you know, well, they need to fix that. And it's like, so you'd start with a bulldozer because there's a bottleneck problem getting to the staging lanes? Because, you know, access, not a problem. In and out, not too bad. The racetrack itself, fine. The shutdown area, one of the longest on the planet before you actually hit a stationary object, because you can go out into the desert forever if you have to.
Ron Capps did it.
Exactly. You know, the tow road back, you know, you don't have a whole lot of fan traffic. It's not usually a big issue, you know, working your way in and out. So the one thing he could come up with that was wrong with the place is, you know, well, there's a little bottleneck going into the staging lanes. And I'm going, and for that, the place is a dump and you want to bulldoze it.
I need to be playing poker while watching drag racing. Let's make that happen. Maybe that's in the future. But, yes, I agree. It was a character track is what it was. That's what I call them, character tracks. Maybe they're not, like, the most up-to-date amenities, but they definitely have that character, and you can see that you're part of the history of the sport. All right, next question. This one coming from Twitter directly, WFO Radio, Ryan Pebble, says to Joe and Alan, what websites do you and NHRA Reinhardt, which is Alan's Twitter handle, frequent to see what is going on in the world of drag racing? Happy holidays, says Ryan.
You know, obviously NHRA.com is leads the way there. I also click Competition Plus pretty much every day just to find out, you know, what's going on outside of the NHRA realm, because Comp Plus not only covers NHRA drag racing, but everything quarter and eighth mile related. And, you know, other than that, I've got a couple of the chat rooms that I click on from time to time just to kind of see what the fans are thinking and what's going on out there. But, you know, that's where I get most of my news. And then, of course, I talk to Joe once a week, and he fills me in. So that's the most important thing.
There you go. Exactly. WFORadio.com. You can listen to all the interviews with the drivers. I would agree with Alan. Pretty much the same. I also, Competition Plus and NHRA.com are my one and two, but I've been checking the guys at DragIllustrated.com as well. They've had a couple of stories broken this year. But really, Drag Racing Action Magazine, I find out some things there too. But Twitter, Alan, Twitter, you can follow the people directly. If something happens, the place you're going to see it first, more often than not, once it's public, is the Twittersphere. Other than that, it might not be something that is supposed to be out there in public.
I will tell you one other thing that I keep an eye on, and not on a daily basis, but on at least a weekly basis, is Drag Race Central.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You know, for those who don't know, it's part of the Summit Racing Equipment website, but Drag Race Central, the thing that I read week in and week out is Bob Fry's stories. He puts one up every Tuesday and every Thursday. One of them is From the Tower, and one of them is Did You Know? And what he does during the off season is go back and profile the champions, and not so much the Sean Langdons and the Jed Coughlins, but like the Summit ET champions and some of the division champions and some of the stuff, and you get to know a little bit more about, you know, the guys, the players, what their life is like behind the scenes. You know, during the racing season, you can go to Drag Race Central and keep up with basically everything, whether it's a division race, whether it's a race, you know, an IHRA race, whether it's an ADRL race. You know, they have basically live results coming from every racetrack. But during the off season, you know, Bob Fry's columns make it worth checking on at least once a week.
Absolutely. That's DragRaceCentral.com. And there's probably one that we both hit that we're not saying just off the top of our head. And obviously I would apologize to whoever that manages that site. But if you go to all those, you're probably going to know when something happens.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, there's not a whole lot of stuff that slides under the radar that all of those guys will miss. So.
Absolutely. And that's why, if that happens, that's why you have WFO, because we check them all. All right, next one. Lots of news regarding Pro Modified. Where do you see this class going in the future, says Les in Wisconsin?
You know, I honestly don't know, and it's still going to be around. You know, obviously the NHRA deal, they're set. You know, they've got a new TV package, which is huge. The fact that they were able to put together not necessarily a series sponsor, you know, like we have the Mellow Yellow series or the Lucas series, but each of the Pro Mod events has got a presenting sponsor. So, you know, they've got some more influx of money coming in supporting the category. And as I mentioned, a new TV program, which I think is going to be really cool, especially since it won't air, you know, on a as-they-run basis, but during this time next season, you'll be able to click on every weekend and keep track of the Pro Mod stuff and follow along if you want to do it that way. As far as, you know, the ADRL versus XDRL versus now there's a new, I believe it's National Drag Racing Association. The announcement came out at the PRI with...
That's Earwood's deal, right?
What's that?
Steve Earwood's deal?
Yes, yes. And... You know, I don't know exactly all that's going on. I know there are some guys that were concerned about the health and the future of the ADRL, and so some of the track operators wanted to band together and make sure that they still had, you know, a series and a viable thing, and so that kind of launched this new deal. You know, Kenny says that the ADRL is alive and well and coming back next season, so some of that I think remains up in the air. There will be Pro Mod racing on a lot of different levels and a lot of different venues. I think the details just haven't been worked out yet.
And I see that one of the Pro Extreme cars, I guess that's ADRL, going to be running a 2014 Cadillac CTSV. And that's something that I'm hoping happens. The Pro Mod cars, the body styles, it's kind of been interesting to watch them morph from this one to this one to this one. Everybody had to have a Corvette, and then everybody had to have this. And now it's kind of going in different directions. I wonder if we're going to start seeing some of these new cars, like when will we see a C7 Corvette, the idea that there's going to be a Cadillac out there. I think that's kind of cool. I like that aspect of the class.
I do, too. One thing that Pro Mod has always been able to hang their hat on is, you know, the diversity and the fact that they were just wild, crazy, wacky machines. And I'd hate to see all of that get refined out of the category. You know, if the determination came up that, hey, okay, you know, we need to run a new model Mustang, and that's going to be a half a hundredth better than anything else, and so you end up with 14 new model Mustangs out there, I think that really would be detrimental to the class. You know, the problem is that there's no way to legislate that, okay, well, you got to have three of these and four of these and two of these and six of these. So, you know, it just all kind of follows the way it goes. I'm looking forward to seeing that CTSV, though. I want to see it, I mean, live and in person. That, you know, you and I talked about that years ago, about wouldn't that make a great pro stock car when they came out with the two-door Cadillac, and thought there might be one out there by now, but apparently, not a lot of factory support from the Cadillac folks, so the guys all ended up in Camaro.
That's not who their target is. I guess they're going after the road race crowd with those Challenge Series cars. I remember Warren Johnson talking about that, that it could be a cool situation, and it's a gorgeous car. Speaking of cars, Alan, you got your first up-close and personal encounter with the 2015 Mustang. And I had sent you some spy shots, but I don't know if you got as good an angle as you got in person. As a Mustang guy, what were your impressions?
Very impressed. I, you know, like the look, like the personality. I think that, you know, the evolution since the first of the retro cars came out has followed an awful lot like it did in the past. You know, when you went from the 64-56 model to the 67-8 model to the 69-70 model, really, really like the car. Got, as you said, an up-close look at it, and quite impressed. Can't wait till the first time I get one as a rental car.
Yes, that is probably not going to be that far away, the way the Mustangs are very popular with rental car companies.
You know, and all the performance cars are. That's one of the great things about it. You know, you can go to the dealer and take a test drive in one. Okay, great. But if you're really thinking about, hey, I'm going to invest, you know, however many thousands of dollars to buy one of these, whether it's a V6, whether it's a V8, whether it's a hot rod, you can go rent those things, and, okay, for $500 for the week, you can take it on an extended test drive and decide, is this really what I want? And, I mean, they have 5.0 Mustangs out there now. They have SS Camaros out there now. They have a lot of that stuff, and I think that's a pretty popular selling point is, you know, if you really want to take more than just a, you know, 10-minute spin around the block in one of these things, go spend a couple of $100, rent one for a couple of days, and then you can decide if you really like it. And I know they're very popular with the rental car companies.
Best advice you're ever going to get when it comes to buying a car, right there. Believe it, write it, mark it down, put it on a magnet on your refrigerator, whatever. But what Alan just said is absolutely true, because a car doesn't reveal its secrets. The car is like the woman. It does not reveal the secrets immediately. at least, you know, not at least for a couple days.
Well, and that's one thing that, you know, you and I spend some time in rental cars, and I've had a couple opportunities where they're like, okay, look, you know, for the $100 upgrade, would you like to have the Mustang convertible for the week? Sure. I mean, you know, I have to pay for that $100 upgrade. My travel agent's not going to do that. But, and then it gives me an opportunity to drive the thing, you know, top up, top down, how loud is it, how, you know, hot or cold is it, how, and you get to find out what you like about them, and also, you know, if there's things that you don't like about them. But it's, at this point in time, if I was going to go buy a new car, I wouldn't do it without going and renting one and at least driving it for a couple of days. You know, I'd hate to think that I was going to make 60 payments or whatever on a car that I decided 2 weeks after I bought I didn't like. So I'd really rather go figure that out ahead of time.
That the whatever is in the wrong place or just not something that's friendly to you. And those are the kind of things that emerge in day two or three. The first day that you're in a car, you're just kind of figuring out where the main things are. You don't get comfortable until a couple of the days into it. Alan, great job as usual. Any other final points, thoughts, news stories that caught your mind? I see that Steve Matusik is going to be driving with Danny Rowe Racing in 2014. Anything that caught your mind that you want to throw on the top here?
No, just that, you know, it was good to have everybody back in the same place, and you know, the social events that take part of PRI, and not, you know, not necessarily the scripted social events, just the fact that, you know, hey, you bump into a guy, and you know, and again, you know, from spending so much time at the racetrack this year that you see a lot of guys, but it's like, hey, he's in his office, I've got stuff going on, and you know, you say hi, you spend, you know, a minute. But being able to just sit down and chat with the guys, you know, ran into Jim Yates, had a very nice long conversation with him at the PRI show about, you know, just the state of pro stock, you know, past, present, and where we think it's going kind of stuff. And that's just such a big part of that show. And, you know, the number of guys that I just went by and said, you know, hey, just wanted to say hi, you know, hadn't seen you in 3 months or something, and now you're not going to see you again for a couple of months. And so you just touch base with those guys, and you know, that's always a big part of the trade show. But it was a terrific event, you know, weather notwithstanding, and I think a good time was certainly had by most, if not all.
Absolutely, and kind of disappointed I was not there, but I will be there next year. That is my plan.
Well, I look forward to seeing you next year. Going to see a lot of you next year, probably before the PRI show.
Yes, I revealed at the end of the show last week, like in the last moment, because I like to try to keep everyone hooked until the very last second. So I reveal certain things in the last moment or two of the show that I have been invited back for 12 races in 2014 to do some track announcing, which I am very pumped up about. That is going to be fun. And some different tracks this year than last year.
Well, and you should. You know, it's an opportunity to see different parts of the country, an opportunity to get to know different racers. You know, if you go to the same tracks every year, you're going to see the same guys every year, and you know, getting familiar with them is great. But you know, if all you've ever done is read about, you know, the Lane family, for instance, that runs the West Coast stuff, if you never got to go out west and go meet Cody or go meet Jeff and sit down and, you know, say hi to him in the pits, then you know, you're missing out on something. So obviously the you know, shuffling the schedule around is good for everybody.
Absolutely, and I invite all racers to send me their personal propaganda. I will go through it very eagerly. That would be great. Alan, great job as usual. Thank you so much. I'm glad you made it out of there back to sunny, warm Arizona.
Me too. Now it's just a matter of getting some ground made, since I'm going to be home for the next few weeks, and I got a lot of stuff to get done before it's time to start traveling again.
There you go. We've got to cruise the Stang. I can't wait to hear about it.
Me too. Believe me. Me too.
All right, Alan. Thank you.
All right, Joe.
The NHRA's Alan Reinhart joins us each week right here on WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. If you haven't downloaded the application for free, it's on iPhone, it's on Android, Google Play, or the App Store. If you haven't followed on Facebook and Twitter, do so now. You can also follow me, WFO Joe, which is where I'm getting my guests these days. I'm just kind of scouring Twitter, and let me tell you, it's the best thing ever. For instance, on this show, he won Stock Eliminator at the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals this year. The Brad Plourd, his second U.S. Nationals win. He's one of the very rare drivers to double up at a national event, which puts him in the rarefied air among NHRA Lucas Oil Series elite. And he's going to be on this show. Followed each other on Twitter. Next thing you know, he's on the show, and it's going to be great. So stick around for that. And then Bob Wilbur, he's the team manager for Wilkerson Racing. Former professional baseball player. He's been involved in sports and sports marketing. And we're going to speak with Bob, obviously, about his marketing and racing and baseball careers, but also his view and thoughts on what's going on with the sport of drag racing and where we are in terms of the sporting world with so many different things out there, choices, options, all of these things. So it's going to be a fun show, and you are going to absolutely love it. Now, I want to remind everybody out there that we try to keep this show rolling right through the off season. And we've got a full archive. You can go back and listen to any of the old interviews. Old, I say old, as in previous. Anything from this past season. Previous interviews, race winners. Spend some time in the WFO Radio archive and check it out. And make sure to enable push notifications when you download the application. That is a great way to keep up with everything that's happening. I let you know who's going to be on the show. When you can call in your questions for Reinhardt, which we always want those, 954-889-6796, or you email me, joe@wforadio.com, or @WFO Radio, and we will get it to Alan Reinhardt. Your questions about NHRA drag racing. Of course, we've got our Ignition show as well. When we come back, we're going to hear from Brad Plourd. We're going to hear from Bob Wilbur. But first, I want to tell you about the folks at Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Frank's a 2-time funny car champ. Next year, he'll be inducted into the Drag Racing Hall of Fame. But it's really about the drivers that have gone through the school that have gone on to greatness. And they're all over the sport of drag racing. Jack Beckman is a perfect example. The techniques, the mental process. Maybe you want to get your super gas license. Maybe you want to get your super comp license. You can do that. And when you roll out of there with your license, you think to yourself, I now have the tools to go out and pursue a world championship. That is a rare thing. But at the same time, maybe you just want the experience. Maybe you've got a corporate team of salespeople. You want to do a team building experience and feel the acceleration of one of these dragsters. You can do that, too. I suggest you open a browser right now. Go to frankhawley.com. That's frankhawley.com to find out more. We'll be back after this with 2-time U.S. Nationals winner, Brad Plourd.
This is WFO Radio.
Redline Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in Redline motor oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials, known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer, or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
Get fired up on the WFO line.
WFO, Joe.
954-889-6796.
It's just been an absolute joy to be a drag racing fan.
Go wide open, and your call may be used on the show.
Or preface by saying I'm not a Kurt Busch fan or apologist. I don't know where Greg Anderson's ego is gone, but I know one person that's going to be a big-time villain in pro stock.
That's 954-889-6796. That phone line is always WFO.
Hey, this is Joe Costello, and we'll be back to the show in a second. But first, I want to tell you about CompetitionPlus.com. There's a reason CompetitionPlus.com is the leader among drag racing electronic magazines. Their trained staff is always on alert and always asking the tough questions. The end result is hard-hitting drag racing journalism with up-to-the-minute reporting. For over a decade, CompetitionPlus.com has been a pioneer as drag racing's go-to source for the latest in news, race coverage, and high-quality photography. Their trained staff thrives on getting the inside stories, and their columnists study their topics before they hit their first keystroke. When it comes to covering the races, they leave you feeling as if you've actually been to the race. CompetitionPlus.com is an honest-to-goodness, free drag racing magazine. published by the most passionate of drag racing fans, who just happen to be journalists. Don't wonder what's going on in the drag racing world. Be in the know daily. Log on to CompetitionPlus.com.
Android and iPhone users, download the WFO Radio app. It's sports radio for racing fans.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
The ultimate racing show, including WFO Radio NHRA Nitro, WFO Radio Ignition, the WFO Radio NASCAR Tailgate Party, news, videos, push notifications, and more.
I just hope I'm part of it.
Go to the App Store or Android Market, search WFO Radio, and download it now. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio, where the NHRA season never ends. One thing that we have gotten over and over and over again, especially this year, was a lot of requests for more Lucas Oil Series personalities, drivers running in the alcohol ranks and drivers running in stock and super stock and super gas and super comp. And this past week, I was kind of going through the WFO Radio Twitter account, made some connections, and just like that, we're inviting him on the show. And you might have seen him win his second U.S. Nationals this past year, driving in stock eliminator. Joining us now, the Brad, Brad Plord. Brad, do you like being called the Brad?
I do, actually. I do. There's a few bad Brads around, and I guess, you know, the Brad is a little bit better than being one of the few bad Brads, I guess.
One of the many bad Brads. And you can understand the whole bad Brad thing. I know Reinhardt always refers to you as the Brad, and rightfully so. What a year. Another U.S. Nationals. Of course, your resume is very strong, but what about that Indy win? That was tremendous.
Oh, man. Kind of funny, you know, going into the week, you really don't know how the things are going to work out. And I was able to drive my buddy TJ Pyre's car. He has a fast car from Division One, and we actually didn't get in to the show till the last session. The first run, I would have been in, but I was like, I think I was 5 pounds light. So, you know, he's nervous, I'm nervous. He's at home in Massachusetts, and we're talking throughout the weekend, and he's like, I can't believe we're not in. And, but we finally got in, and, you know, it just, it was a long week of getting up early every morning and getting your stuff iced down and cooled off and warmed up and cooled back off. And so it all worked out.
I want to focus a little more on the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals win from this year and some of the drama surrounding it. But first, I'd love to, every time someone comes on WFO Radio, to get to know the initial motivation. I think everyone has the same. Some have referred to it as an addiction. I'll just call it mutual hobby. But the bottom line, loving race cars, wanting to get out there. You just described days and days of grueling work. It's work. Getting up early, working your tail off, going to sleep late. To do that for fun takes a very unique personality. How did you get involved in the sport of drag racing?
Well, we'd have to thank my dad, Bernie, for that. As a young kid, that's really all we did was work in the shop. You know, he had an alcohol dragster. When I was born, he was running Super Comp. And I think in about 1990, 91, he switched to alcohol dragster, and he just had a love for blown alcohol cars. You know, he got his one and only national win in 92 at the Winter Nationals. So it kind of addicted him even more, and he didn't give up. He was always underfunded. But he had his own stuff, and, he ran hard for what he had, and I think he ran alcohol dragster until probably 03 or 04 and then finally gave up on it. And he's actually been racing a couple different stuff, different classes now. Like, he and I own a 71 Chevelle Stalker together, and he's raced some stock and super comp, and he's getting the desire to race. Just, you know, he used to have the passion just to go fast, and now he's wanting to just race to be competitive and, you know, try to turn on some wing lights.
That's kind of an interesting point that we often try to make here on the show. A lot of our listeners are tuning in to hear the Nitro drivers who are really just wanting to go fast, and that there is a whole nother level of racers out there that once they kind of either awaken or maybe come up through it to the whole bracket racing side, the fact that you have to drive the finish line, that there's an additional element. And there are some racers that don't even have the desire to go as fast as they can, that they're even more focused on classes with finish line driving. What would you consider yourself?
Oh, by far, bracket racing, you know, super comp, stock, super stock stuff. I enjoy going fast. I've drove a Pro Mod. I drove Mike Knowles' Bull and Money 68 Camaro. I say drove. I attempted to drive it. I probably made it 50 feet. I've drove a dragster automatic. I've been in the sixes. I have my pro stock license. But at the same time, I like to go to the track when I know or I feel like I'm competitive enough to win. Like, I wouldn't want to go to the race like my dad did, you know, in an underfunded team with, you know, volunteer help. He was going there more for fun, but, and he knew he couldn't, he was probably not going to win. Sure, he could have, but I like to go to the race when it's all on my shoulders. And if we don't win, it's because probably something I did. I know I can make the cars as good as I possibly can. It just always, it seems to always come down to the driver, which I just like that. I don't like, you know, Top Fuel. Granted, I would love to run it. The fact that you can do your job and you can have a great light, but you still get beat in bracket racing and super comp and stuff. If you do your job, your chances of winning the round are pretty good. You know, and obviously there's mistakes that can be made and you got to overcome those, but I would rather have a chance to win the whole race coming into the gates, you know.
That having been said, if the phone rings and it's a top team that says, hey, we hear the Brad is pretty good, we want to give the Brad a shot, you would jump in the car.
Without a doubt. Yeah, no doubt. I've always dreamed about, you know, My first choice would be pro stock. I've always had the dream of running one, until I got my license of, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, just to get a feel for it. Thankful to my parents to give me that opportunity. But I don't think there's a whole lot of money in pro stock as far as a driver. You know, you look at the top teams out there, they're all heavily funded guys, you know, whether they're,
extremely wealthy,
yeah,
individuals.
Well, yep, most of them are, and then you got Top Fuel, which is mostly corporate America, and then you actually get paid to drive the car, and you can, you know, make a good living. Probably the smart thing would be to run Top Fuel, but I'm not sitting by the phone waiting by any means.
Well, you're out there having a very successful career. And you've been able to win. We can't understate the fact that you have two U.S. Nationals victories. And what I think is a very interesting statistic is that you've won in a dragster chassis and super comp, and you've won in a stock body Chevrolet Nova, which two very different styles of racing, disciplines, car control, just the way you judge the track are totally different. We've often spoken on the show, and it's a point that Alan Reinhart brings up, that it takes something different to be successful in the two different styles of cars, and to win the big go in both, that's huge.
Yeah, you know, I run two cars every weekend. I love running bottom bowl, foot brake stuff, and I love running super comp or super gas. It keeps you on the, you know, keeps your head right, keeps everything. You don't have a whole lot of time to think about the one car. I can't stand going to a race with one car anymore. I've been spoiled. But it just makes you better. You know, I've been very fortunate to be able to run two cars, and I wouldn't have it any other way now. It just keeps you sharp.
Let's go into that, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there, local bracket racers, who think, wow, you're running one round, you're four-tenths pro tree, Then the next time you stage the car, you're waiting on a 5/10 full tree. In one, you might be getting a handicap. The other, how do you manage that? Is there a way that you tell yourself where you are and what to do? Almost like a switch being flipped from one to the next. And have you ever had, has that ever been a challenge?
It's crazy to even think about it now that you mention it, because when you're in the car, whatever car it is, whether it's my dragster or my Nova, you just know what to do. You know what's, I mean, you don't have to think about it. It's just natural. And I'm sure, you know, there might be people out there that run two cars that struggle with it, or they have to actually think about, okay, I got to leave off the bottom here. I got to shift this way. I got to do it. Just when I get into my Nova, it's like a second home to me. And the dragster, I've been running the same car since 08. It's just, I get in it and it's just natural. I don't know how to explain it. It's, you know, I've made runs where there's 10 minutes between them, you know. Seattle, I was in both finals, and it's like run one, and as soon as you can get back, run the other, and it's just boom, boom, boom. No chance to even think. It's just all natural, I guess.
What would you say is the most important aspect of success when in a situation like that, where they're calling you, you know there's a limited amount of time, maybe track officials or race officials are compelling you, look, we need you up there, and maybe the tendency at that moment would be to rush or get out of your mental game, the zone that everybody talks about, that every athlete, whether you're on the football field, basketball court, or even in a race car, you've got to maintain a certain mental focus, and those things are trying to pull you out of it. How do you stay in it?
I've always told myself they're not going to run without you. And I might get proved wrong one of these days, but I always try to be there in a timely manner. You know, I always have to make sure my cars are ready before, like if I'm still in both cars, I'll make sure both cars are ready before I go up in the one car. Like even starting out in the mornings, a lot of the races is stock first out and then super comp second out. And so I have to get up a little earlier to make sure both cars are warmed up and ready, rather than, okay, I'll go run stock and then come back and warm up the dragster. Well, there's just no time. So you just, you know, they give you enough time. They let us run two cars. So they're not going to run without you if you do everything you can to get up there. And you just got to keep your head on straight. You know, it's just, I guess it's just one of those things that comes with experience too. I've done it for so long. It getting to those late rounds in two cars can play havoc with your mind, but you just got to try to do your best, I guess, and deep breaths and, you know, just keep with your routine. You got to have a routine and you just got to stick with it.
Brad Plourd with us here on WFO Radio, one of the rare drivers to have doubled up at an NHRA national event, has won the U.S. Nationals twice, including this year in Stock Eliminator, joining us as we delve deeper into the Lucas Oil Series, giving you folks what you want, and it was pretty easy the way it worked out on Twitter, right, Brad?
Oh, extremely easy. Yep. You said, hey, you want to join me on the show? And I said, hey, let's do it.
Simple as that. If only they were that easy. I was mentioning to you, I would do this all day because, number one, I think that the sport needs to grow. And I think the way that the sport grows is to get people who are maybe in the grandstands to go bracket race at their local track. I really think that's the key. And maybe, you know, guys like Langdon ascend up the ladder. Who knows? But the grassroots tracks, the bracket racing, the guy who's out there in the four-door station wagon, he's really the backbone of the sport. And if we could turn some of our listeners into that guy, that helps everything. And I think that guy relates to what you're doing.
I started in junior dragsters when I was 12. I was a little bit late getting to it. My parents always had a great philosophy to make me earn what we were doing, and so we had to buy and sell a couple things, and you know, I had a go-kart, so we sold that, and we just kind of kept going up and up and got a junior dragster, and my sister and I shared it for a little bit, but she really wasn't interested, so But yeah, I mean, as soon as I turned 16, the day I turned 16, I was out there on the track in a 67 Nova and just making laps, you know. But the guy in the grandstand can take his Volvo wagon and go down there, and it doesn't matter if it runs 20 seconds or 12 seconds. You can still be competitive. You can still get the fire for it, you know, that I have and that pretty much all of my friends and everyone that races have, because it's just, it's addicting. It's just, it's hard to explain to people that don't know, because it's so, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't do anything. I'd be bored if I didn't do it.
A lot of characters out there too. Searching the internet, just doing some research, I see a photograph from 2011 on thisisbracketracing.com. You and Don O'Neill. Speaking of characters, you hang with that guy?
I try not to as much as I can. No, he's one of my better friends. He's a great guy. Works hard at what he does. You know, served our country for many, many years, and yeah, we hang a lot. We travel together. He's saved my butt a few times. He'll do anything for us. You know, he's a true friend. If you needed his help, he would be there.
Don's been on the show a few times in the past, and I always love catching up with him. When I saw his mug on there, I was like, all right, very good. Crazy characters, though, right? I think that the people who go to a national event, any kind of drag race in general, they take some time to walk down through the sportsman pits. They get an opportunity to see some of this, but what happens at national events is just part of it. Are you at a bracket track almost every weekend?
I would say I used to be. Like I say, I got married in April to my wife, Katie. I would say I probably go racing twice a month now, where I used to probably go three or four times a month. There's some weekends where I'll go to a track Friday night and then another one Saturday night. But I try to go to the races where I can be there for 2 days at least. It's just better to kind of go to one place and get into a rhythm. I don't like going to a race and having to unload everything and then load back up that same day. But I've got to a point now where I don't want to go as much as I was. I still enjoy it every bit the same, but I like being home too.
Well, I think that says a lot about your wife right there. I don't know that every racer can say exactly that. That's a credit to her.
Yeah, no, she's a great girl. Very lucky to find her. We go real well together. She came from a racing family. Her dad raced locally around here in Alabama, and she really didn't know much about it until she kind of started hanging with me, and now she lives for the national events. She lives for the races like the World Footbreak Challenge over there in Bristol, the Million, these big bracket races that we go to, the Spring Fling. She always wants to go to the big ones, but when I go to the local track on a Saturday night, she's like, I think I might just stay home today. She likes the big gambles of the, you know, the big payouts, and so it's cool, though. She really enjoys it as far as, you know, what she tells me, so.
Well, that is very important. All right, let's go back in time a couple of months back to the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals. It seems, number one, that your key to victory is to have never sat in the car before, because that was the case with the Jegs.com dragster that you won in Supercomp several years back. And from what I understand, you hadn't driven DJ's Nova either, and you go out there and you're going rounds. First of all, talk about being in an unfamiliar car and why you think you're successful.
I've done it a few times and I've had success, and it's I don't really know how to put a finger on why. I know that I won in the Hancock and Lane car in Superstock in Seattle 1 year. I believe I won in Charlotte's Supercomp car for the first time. I drove it in Memphis. And then you mentioned the Jegs car. I think it's probably just you're, like I said, I've been driving my dragster, Charlotte's dragster, since 08 and my Nova for since I was in high school. So I'm so at home in those cars. Sometimes I feel like I'm, everything's just more redundant and just repetitive. You get into a new car, you're focused more on actually driving the car because you have different things going on. You got switches in different spots and, you know, just different tendencies of the car. I think it just heightens your awareness and Indy this year was just my weekend to win. I didn't drive fantastic by any means. I didn't drive good. I didn't drive bad. I just, it was just meant to be for us to win that weekend. So.
Well, you ran into a heads-up round. That had to be on your mind from what you've told us, that all of a sudden now, after all of this, now you got a heads-up race, and suddenly driver skill and ability is part of it, but the performance of the car is a much bigger part of it.
Yeah, we kind of knew we were looking towards a heads-up final, you know, down to maybe 8 cars. We knew that Mr. McGinley was still in, and when we got to the final, I immediately went and weighed. You know, I took all our weight out that we had extra in there and got it down to the minimum weight, and then just started cooling it down, and we changed the oil. We put the lightest Lucas oil we could find in my trailer, and we even changed the rear end fluid and just heated the transmission up, and you know, all the tricks of the trade that people do on heads up runs, which we had already done to qualify, so we had to kind of go back to what we had done in qualifying. So, but he should have outrun us, and he probably would if we ran again. He just I guess the old saying is that drag racing is not done on paper, it was done on the track. And if you would have told me he had a 006 and I had a 052, I would have said, I'd been looking at his rear end the whole way down the track. But he just made a bad run, and we made a decent run, not as good as we thought we could, but good enough to get around him.
And the rest, as they say, is history. Brad, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been great getting to know you. And what about 2014? What are your plans? What are you going to be racing, and where are we going to see you?
I'm probably going to start out at a couple Division II events. I'm going to actually try my Nova and some Super Street. My dad built me a bracket motor for it. And I just want to run a couple national events in Super Street with that car. I mean, that's my car, you know, that's my baby. And
which one is that, the blue one?
My blue 66, yep, the one I've had since high school.
Beautiful car.
So, thank you. I want to see if I can get a national event win in Super Street. Would be fun. I've had 2 in stock in it last year, Seattle and Brainerd, and then just Super Comp. And like I say, I'll probably stay a little more local. I don't like driving to the West Coast. It's by myself. It's just a lot of miles. I talked to Fletcher and all those guys. They are one man teams. It's really hard. So just kind of Gainesville, you know, East Coast kind of stuff, and Super Comp. I'll try Super Street at the beginning, and then I'll switch back to stock.
Excellent. Well, we wish you the best of luck, and now got someone else to root for, and hopefully our listeners track you down out there at some of these races, and maybe even follow you on Twitter. But I do appreciate you coming on WFO Radio, and congratulations. And U.S. Nationals, those trophies are such a big deal. Now you've got 2 of them in 2 different classes. That speaks volumes. Congratulations on that.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks for having me, Joe.
And thanks for coming on the show, Brad. Welcome back anytime.
All right. Appreciate it.
Brad Plourd with us here on WFO Radio. What a season. Another U.S. Nationals win. And I liked what he said. You never know what's going to happen going into the week. It's a marathon. It is an absolute marathon, the amount of work they put in. And to hoist that trophy at the end of the weekend must be the most amazing feeling, and he's getting ready for 2014. Big thanks to Brad for coming on the show. We're going to do more of this, speaking with the Lucas Oil Series drivers, going in depth, because everyone's got a story. They're coming out of usually a racing family, very hardworking people, and have just thrown their lives into this and have kind of caught this, whatever you want to call it. Some use the word addiction. I don't really like that word because it's just kind of a negative word. But whatever it is, it's a passion to go out there and compete and race in so many different elements, the sound, the cars, the being out there, the camaraderie. I can see all of that. But then as that moves on, it's about competition, the battling it out. These guys and girls take it very seriously. They're out there winning and losing and driving hundreds of miles to get where they got to go. They're spending a lot of time, effort, money. It's a big, big deal. And what I would say to the listeners out there, maybe you're tuning in to hear Nitro drivers or Pro Stock drivers or the Mellow Yellow Series cars, always make some time to walk through the Lucas Oil pit area, meaning the sportsman cars. Always make some time on your national event itinerary, which I always suggest that you have, like a minute by minute, where you're going to be, when you're going to be there in between the sessions, because there is so much to see. You have to be organized in how you're going to see it. And if you take a walk through the sportsman pits, you'll see some of the nicest cars you've ever seen in your life, much nicer than at your local car show at your mall or grocery store. And oh, by the way, they're the fastest of their breed in the world, and some of the best racers you're going to find in the region that you happen to be in, and great people who are successful. And maybe you're looking for a mechanic for your regular car, someone you trust. Well, who's better than someone who's holding a national record or running in stock eliminator or super stock? A lot of great reasons, a lot of things going on in the sportsman pits. And a big thanks to Brad for coming on the show here on WFO Radio. All right, well, we've got more. We've got Bob Wilbur. Last week, we were talking about Bob. Bob's the team manager for Wilkerson Racing. Tim Wilkerson, very popular guy. Very fun, funny guy who is also a very intense competitor, getting a lot done with a little. How does that happen? Bob Wilbur is going to tell us. Also, former professional baseball player. Going to talk a little bit about his time traveling the country and a story that we posted on our Facebook page, The Greatest Team You've Never Heard Of. It is a great read. I suggest you check it out. We're going to have Bob Wilbur on next. Before we do that, though, I was scouring the Facebook pages and saw that some of the NHRA PR people are posting and pushing a vote from racer.com. And you know how we love votes and voting here on WFO Radio, having won the Competition Plus Show of the Year several years in a row now. And at some point, compelling people to vote. If that happens again, if we are fortunate enough to be nominated, we're going to be really bothering you for votes. But what has happened is racer.com is voting for Driver of the Year. And so you can check out our Facebook page or just go to Facebook, any of the teams, and they've got a couple of nominees from the world of mainstream motorsports, meaning Formula One, NASCAR, IndyCar, and it's all up there. John Force is the nominee for NHRA drag racing. It's a write-in ballot. So you click the link and you got to type in. It's not multiple choice. You've got to type in your ballot and fill out your ballot. And there's multiple people who have been nominated. But I think Racer of the Year, the overall Racer of the Year, is very, very important. And what I would say is, of course, you're going to write in John Force, right? The guy wins his 16th title. He does an incredible kind of come-from-behind surge to dominate the countdown. Why not vote for John? I would check it out. Go to the Facebook page and click on the racer.com ballot. Also, interesting to see Nirvana and Kiss getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That was cool, too. I know there's a lot of Kiss fans out there. The Kiss Army was very angry for years and years about Kiss not being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, to all you folks, the pressure's off, finally. All right, when we return, Bob Wilbur, team manager from Wilkerson Racing, going to join us here on WFO Radio. We're going to have a conversation about the state of the sport of drag racing, what's going on at Wilkerson Racing, and the greatest team you've never heard of, right here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's the newest funny car chap, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. 480-7223 or visit frankhawley.com.
Hey, this is Carlos, WFO Radio producer. When you're done watching all the great videos, which I made, on the WFO Radio TV YouTube channel, head over to the WFOradio.com store for some really hot WFO Radio gear, like the WFO Radio hat, which is now only $15. WFO New Era hats are on sale. Get a hat for your dad. Get a hat for your head. Or a sticker kit for your truck. WFO Radio gear is on sale at WFOradio.com. Get some.
If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out WilsonManifolds.com, the leader in intake manifold and nitrous oxide development. They've set records and won championships in just about every series in professional racing. Sprint Cup, Nationwide, Camping World Truck Series, NHRA Pro Stock, right up to the Nitro classes. If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out the leader in intake and nitrous development at WilsonManifolds.com.
I am the greatest.
WFO Radio is the CompetitionPlus.com Radio Show of the Year.
It's all over. Three straight championships.
Hey, Joe, this is Corey Mihalik of Mihalik Brothers Racing. Kyle and I wanted to call and congratulate you and your team on winning your third consecutive CompetitionPlus.com Internet Radio Show of the Year award. No one deserves it more than you guys.
Craig from Seattle, WFO Radio, three-peat.
WFO Joe, this is Bobby from the Bayou. Hey, winning one time, that just shows the newness and the freshness of the show. Second time, maybe a little bit of the same thing, but the third time to win it is just strictly WFO.
Back to back to back.
Float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. Ah! Rumble, young man, rumble. Ah!
The one, the only, WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
The greatest of all time, of all time.
It's great to be on your show, man. Every time I'm on your show, brother, I know on WFO, I know we did something good.
Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio, and a big thank you to all you NHRA motorsports drag racing fans who keep checking back week in, week out, right through the frozen tundra of winter. Like we like to say, the NHRA season never ends on WFO Radio, and we are constantly trying to bring you closer to the sport. Now, last week, me and Reinhardt, we were talking about Bob Wilbur and a little baseball, and I don't even know how it came up, but then we got this email from Wayne. Wayne says, hey, Joe, love the show and the off-season opportunity to go behind the scenes with folks on the radio show and have them share their stories. Any chance you can get Bob Wilbur on? Thanks, says Wayne. And if you've got an email, you can email me, Joe at WFOradio.com. And Wayne, yes, I think we can have Bob Wilbur on. We're going to try to make that happen. And he joins us now. Bob Wilbur. Bob, what's up, Bob? How are you?
Isn't that just like magic that you just said, we'll see if we can get him on, and here I am?
Just like that? team manager for Wilkerson Racing. I love the internet and its powers and abilities. Bob, thank you so much for coming on, though. Seriously.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I'm a little mystified that anybody wanted to hear me talk, but that's okay. I'm honored as well. So let's get to it.
Well, it's kind of you're a hot topic right now. During the off season, which there is no off season, we should call it the cold season, really. There's still a lot going on. What's going on at Wilkerson Racing right now?
Typical off season for us, as Tim likes to say, put all our junk in a pile, spread it all out on the floor, and see what's going to be good enough for next year and what we got to replace. And for us, I think this off season, much more than last year, is about continuity. I think we pretty much let the world know last year that we had a very young team. I would have suspect of the full-time professional teams, in terms of experience, we had the youngest team. And then we had two complete rookies on our team working critical positions on the motor. And so they had worked on cars before, but they had never worked on a funny car, never touched one like that. So, and then we also took a second-year guy who had just kind of learned the ropes a little bit last year and put him on the clutch, which, you know, might be the single most important crew job. So we were green. We luckily had a couple of guys that have been with us a long time, and to kind of guide the way, but we started the year last year really not knowing. I mean, if you want to equate it to another sport like baseball, it was like starting a bunch of minor leaguers, and you just don't know. You don't know how they're going to do. And as the year went on, they just got better and better, and when we finished the season, they were a seasoned group. They were a group, and that's what they were. They were a team. I mean, they started out as a group of individuals, and they ended up as a very cohesive, close-knit team. So the benefit now for this offseason is we don't have to do that again, because all the guys are back, and they're a team now, and we're really proud of them. And I'm excited to hit the ground running when we get to Pomona in February with this group. And Levi Ray and Schaup is back and excited about next year, and got some other things going. You know, can't talk about those, never can, till it happens. So, but we're working on it hard. Timmy went to the PRI show this past weekend. I haven't talked to him yet to see if he came home with extra millions, but I'm sure he did.
Of course.
He hadn't told me yet. Yeah.
Of course.
He did.
I was bummed. I did not get to go to PRI. I've mentioned it a couple of times because I'm bummed. Came down with something like right at the last second, and I just didn't think it was a good idea to go there not feeling well. But the photographs I saw, it looked like everybody had a great time. It's a pretty big show, and it sounds like a lot got done and accomplished.
Yeah. I'm hearing the same things from various sources, that it was huge. And that's a good sign. You know, if people are there to buy and the manufacturers are there to sell and that sort of stuff's going on and people are saying it's the biggest PRI show ever. And I know a couple guys who were working a couple of booths and they said it was just wall to wall. It was fantastic. So, you know, if purse strings are getting a little looser and people are investing in stuff, that's a good thing for the sport. It's a good thing for all of us, in racing, whatever type of racing you're into. So, sounds great to me. I'm happy to hear all that.
Absolutely, totally agree. Now, we've referenced your ties to America's pastime and the sport of baseball, and even in your conversations, and folks, Bob's got a blog on NHRA.com that he keeps updating, so I would encourage you to check it out, read it. But there's so many threads that I would say kind of run through both sports and the mainstream stick and ball sports in general with motor racing and drag racing and motorsports, maybe more than the average sports fan like a Donovan McNabb type would understand. Bob, you've lived them both. What do you think?
Well, it's funny that I just had that exact same conversation with somebody not too long ago, and it was in relation to the Donovan McNabb comment, which was that race car drivers aren't athletes, but and which I disagree with, and I am an athlete, or at least an ex-athlete. There are a lot of ties, and I find that my perspective is one of the more valuable assets I have. I didn't see my first drag race till I was in my 30s. And you know, my plan, I had a great master plan when I was growing up. I was going to play 10 years in the big leagues and then be a play-by-play announcer for the rest of my life, so I didn't need a fallback.
Great plan. I love that plan.
That was going to happen. Yeah. And it didn't quite happen that way, but, you know, baseball is in my blood. It's my DNA. So I came to drag racing relatively late. Now I've been in this sport doing what I do now as a team manager, PR guy for like 18 years. And I still feel like the new guy. And there's a reason for that. I am still, even after 18 years, I'm a little bit of an outsider because I wasn't a gearhead growing up. You know, the most I knew about race cars and hot rods was from the Revell models that I built so poorly on my kitchen table. But I never worked on cars, and I was a stick and ball guy, the baseball player, and that's really my whole focus until, you know, that career didn't pan out very well and had to go into sports marketing. I should say had to. I was honored to go into sports marketing, and I've had a great career doing that. But so that perspective is something that I think allows me to see the sport from both inside and out and compare it to, you know, sometimes I see us ignoring some issues that we should probably address a little better, or trying to reinvent a wheel that was invented by the stick and ball sports a long time ago. And when you, and a lot of that is in terms of the fan experience and how we market ourselves. And you don't have to overthink that stuff if the examples are out there. And I've been part of a lot of those examples. As part of my career, I was the general manager of two different professional soccer teams, indoor soccer teams. So I ran franchises. I've done PR. I've done marketing, sold sponsorships, managed sponsorships, and whether it's in racing or not, the parallels are all there. And there's some great lessons we can learn. And what I'm most pleased is that over the last, 10 years, we've come so far in that regard as a sport, with leadership from Glendora and from the individual teams. At the team level right now, it is night and day, hate that cliche, but it's a good one, in terms of the team representation on the marketing PR side as compared to when I came into the sport. There are some of my colleagues who work for John Force Racing and Don Schumacher Racing and some other teams out there are world-class talents, and they're very, very dedicated, and the sport's lucky to have them. Sometimes I hear a lot of people complaining about, oh, this team gets all the ink and this team gets all the exposure. And you know what? They've got terrific people representing them. And that's why. And that's good for the sport. A rising tide floats all boats, you know. And anytime I hear someone say it's all about John Force, I'm like, you know, I don't care if Courtney is on the cover of every magazine, because that helps us all. And those guys are my friends, and I respect all these other team reps as well. So as a sport, both in terms of NHRA and in terms of the individual teams, it's just been a great ride here. We kind of weathered the storm of the recession. I believe we're back to healthy again, and I see nothing but, you know, great stuff on the horizon.
Bob Wilbur, team manager for Wilkerson Racing, with us here on WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. There seems to be a lot of, let's just call them opinions, voices out there that do accentuate the negative of the moment. There have been some negative stories, make no mistake. There absolutely have been. But you're painting a very positive picture with a positive, optimistic outlook. And I think you can choose to accentuate whatever you want. That being the case, I would choose to accentuate the positive. We did, as a whole world, really, just go through a really dark period and a very down period, and we do seem to be on the other side now.
I sure hope so, and I'm with you. I'm a natural optimist. I just am. That doesn't mean I'm Pollyanna and I see everything through rose-colored glasses. I just choose to be optimistic. And you're right, and as a society and as a world, we have been in some dark places lately, and a lot of it is the polarization of everyone's beliefs. And part of this is just everybody now has the world at their fingertips. It used to only be Walter Cronkite and Huntley Brinkley could get out there and spread the word. Now everybody can, because they're all, and especially you can do it anonymously.
Yeah.
So it's awfully easy to stand on a soapbox and scream about whatever you want to scream about. And people can be really negative, and you can tip that needle all the way over and say there's a lot of haters out there who seem to just get off on hating whatever they got to hate, whether it's NHRA or politics or the weather or whatever they want to hate on, they can hate on, and they got a forum to do it. So with that power, I'm with you. I think the best thing to do is utilize that to try to make strides forward. And, you know, I also write a column for the National Dragster called Behind the Ropes. I just started it this year, and it's 7 or 8 of them in the magazine this year. And it's supposed to be my kind of insider's view inside the ropes. How I see the sport as a business and from my perspective. And I did one column and kind of mentioned that, you know, it's really easy to get stuck in a real negative world. And then that kind of ties into everybody's melancholy look back at the good old days. and there are people out there who, if it's not going to be 1974 again, they got no interest because this pales in comparison to the good old days. And my point was, you know what? They're gone. And these are the next generation's good old days. And you better live in the moment, because if you spend your whole life looking backwards and wishing you could go back in time, you're never going to be happy. And I personally prefer to be happy. So that's how I see it.
As simple as that. And I think that the really important takeaway from what you just said is that there is always a new young generation who is experiencing their version of the good old days at the moment. And who are we to downplay it or say it stinks? I mean, that happens every generation, but time keeps marching on, and those kids are going to look back at this time more than likely and say, man, that was the best it ever was.
Yep, it's a cycle, and everybody rides their own waves, right? And, we all do some silly things. I wrote somewhere recently, whether it was in my blog or my column, I don't remember, but it was about it was in my baseball blog, Bob on Baseball, because I was talking about the guys these days, and to me, they don't know how to wear a uniform. They all wear these baggy pants, baseball pants that go all the way down to their shoe tops. And, yeah, you know, back in our day, we knew how to wear a uniform. so it was kind of a parallel to that. But that's exactly the thing, is that, you know, when I was in high school, which I hate to admit was in the 70s, that was kind of the height of the hippie era, and I had long hair down to my shoulders, and we all wore bell-bottom hip huggers, and our parents tried to tell us you look like fools, but we knew we didn't, except now when I look back, we did. But that's that experience you go through. Those are our good old days. I personally don't spend a second of my life wishing I could go back to them, so I prefer to live in the moment.
Absolutely. That having been said, there are some things that can be improved. We can always look to refine. I'm sure Tim and the team is always looking at that pile of parts you mentioned, trying to figure out what can be made better and what advances can happen. And that's one of the reasons I love the sport, is because it is evolution on steroids. It's forced evolution. You take anything, whether it be the trailers that come to the track or the tires that carry them or whatever, and it is in a constant state of improvement because it has to be. There are a couple of big stories out there during this offseason have been thrown out there, one involving television ratings, a couple of others involving different classes and sponsorship. As someone who is out there behind the ropes, give me your thoughts on a couple of things maybe that are at the top of your mind that could be adjusted, changed, maybe things that could improve the product for the fans out there, both in attendance live and watching on television.
Yeah, and these are just my opinions. I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody.
You were requested by a listener, so this is...
Yes, okay, here we go. The TV thing's an issue, and there's no getting around that. Now, that being said, you know, the World Series doesn't get the ratings it used to get. The Super Bowl's an anomaly, so don't be comparing us to that. But compared to just a decade ago, there are tenfold times as many options to watch on television, so that the whole product gets diluted because there's 250 to 500 channels. So there's a lot of stuff going on at once. It's kind of hard to say you're going to go get the numbers you got 10 years ago because the audience is just too fractured. Also, the internet completely nullifies the hole we're kind of backed into, which is not being live. Would we all love to be live? Sure we would. But you know, people who think that's an easy thing to do are missing a lot of details, and it's difficult. It's a very, very... We just happen to have a sport that is really, really difficult to show on TV live, unless you're going to have your own channel and be on all day. Well, guess what? That's ESPN3.com. So that, just in itself, even though we're on ESPN, the ESPN3 thing dilutes some of our TV audience. So we're almost diluting our own audience doing that. But, hey, I watch it. I like it, too. And it's a great deal. It wouldn't make very compelling television because it goes on all day, and we all know that's the problem with our format. And how do we get it on TV live? There's lots of people analyzing this, working at it, trying to figure out how to do it. If it seems like if people out there think it's an easy thing, we just need to go do it, it's a lot more difficult than you could ever comprehend. And there's every time you tip over one little domino thinking, okay, we fixed that now, we can do that, five more fall over and now you're maybe taking two steps back. So you also don't want to mess it up. You know, I mean, you don't want to just fly off in one direction thinking we're going to go change the way we present ourselves on TV, and a year later realize, you know, what a fiasco it was, and you didn't think it through enough. So we have all sorts of options out there, I think. I'm not in charge of that. Just like anybody else, I'm just a viewer when it comes right down to it. I'm not involved in the TV whatsoever other than as a viewer. But we all know it's an issue, and we gotta get better at it somehow. So that's what we'll do. I'll tell you what, as an example, when I was in indoor soccer, originally the league, the major indoor soccer league, was on what was then called the USA Network, which was a fairly big second tier network on cable, and cable was still very new then. And it was an expensive proposition to be on USA. And after I left the sport, one of the commissioners that followed decided that it would be better to be a big fish in a smaller pond and get better time slots and better coverage on a smaller network because they'll think we're really important. And it killed the league. There's no such thing as a bigger fish in a little pond. If the pond is little, you don't want to be in it. And if you want to be legit and you want to be respected and have people think of you as legit, you got to be on an ESPN. That's where you go. So there are some new networks out there right now. I think everybody's aware of that, that are making their case to be another ESPN. And I'm sure the powers that be are looking at that and analyzing it. And as we go forward into the rest of this decade, I don't think any of us can imagine what the TV versus internet experience is going to be. You can't imagine it, because if you just think back 2 or 3 years, you couldn't have imagined where we are today. So it changes that fast.
Absolutely. I have been exposed to some of the latest technology with the televisions, and 10 years ago it was not even in the realm of possibility. So maybe in 10 years we'll be all internet, and maybe you just never know. And as you said, Twitter cannibalizes some of the live audience because people follow the teams on Twitter and they get the results and they're watching drag racing in their minds while they're out doing something else. It's pretty amazing what's going on right now.
Yeah, that's true. You're exactly right. The days of, you know, people, once again, they pine for the good old days. You know, it wasn't right when I first came into this sport, some of our races were being shown not tape delayed that night, but a month later. That's where we've come. Now we're facing a challenge of how do we get on instantly so that at least like maybe the semifinals and the finals are live. And how do we make that compelling television? And how do we compete with all this instant information that's out there at everybody's fingertips? And those are all relevant questions, and they're all new questions that didn't exist a couple of years ago. So expecting anyone to have all the answers to that, you know, I'm sure there are some people out there who are pretty bright. And maybe they do have all the answers, but it's like you use the word evolutionary, and it is. This thing is evolving, and we don't exactly know where the future is in this realm, but it's going to get there, and we're going to get there with it. I think eventually we're just going to have to find a way wherever the technology goes. And you mentioned internet versus TV. I'm not a genius in this regard. Somehow I just expect this to all be one thing, and that giant screen on your wall is going to be all of it. I bet the guys at Apple are working on that right now so that it's seamless. So you could go from Facebook to ESPN with one click. I would imagine that's where we're going to end up. If they're not holograms floating in the middle of your room in 3D. If they can ever add, you know, good sound and smell, then we got everybody beat because everybody knows how great it is to be at the drag strip.
Well, isn't that the truth? The live product, I've heard, and not to give those the haters, so to speak, too much airtime, but I don't see where they're correct in the race day product being a bad thing. I can't see. I've been to every major sport, and I've been to big events. I've been to World Series. I've been to big events. And the NHRA race day product is, talk about value, number one, because it's not that expensive, but two, it lasts a long time, and you get a lot of different experiences, whether it be interaction with drivers or the sound and smell of the cars, the fact that they're fast and these guys are competing and performing. The problem, I think, if there's a big challenge out there, is that how do you attract that young audience? You're talking about your team is young, and the kids that are working on your team are young. How do their peers become interested in what they are doing?
That's a good question. It's funny, in the grand scheme of things, I know people like to talk about our aging demographic and we're not attracting the kids. Well, hard, you know, there's hardly any stick and ball sports attracting teenagers right now. They're into their own sports right now. The extreme stuff. And so that's not a problem that's on NHRA's shoulders. But what you were originally talking about in terms of the race day experience, that is one of my pet things. I've been in sports my whole life. There is no value like it, what we provide. By the fact that you can walk right up to the transporters when the guys are warming up their cars is akin to letting you sit in the dugout. You know, I mean, you're actually interacting with the teams and you get this whole, you know, part of a trade show, part of a circus, and then there's great racing. So, and it's all so sensory. There are smells at the ballpark and in the arena. Sure there are. Hot dogs and pine tar and dirt, but man, there's nothing like race cars and nitro and burning rubber and all the things that are part of that experience. Now, that being said, we still have a long way to go in terms of being major league, in terms of the fan experience, where all the other sports have left us behind a little bit. Maybe 40 years ago, going to a football game wasn't a lot different than going to a drag race in terms of the seating and the scoreboards and the concession stands. But now we're talking super stadiums with suites, and everybody has a nice seat that's comfortable to sit in. And we unfortunately still have some venues where, you know, you're sitting on a wooden plank. And if you drop your Coke, it's falling through the slats and hitting somebody down below. So, you know, that's an evolutionary thing too. Most of our tracks are owned by other people. And Bruton Smith does all he can to lead the way and show by example where we need to be. But you can't go to the guys at various tracks and say, you know, you need to spend $20 million this year. They don't have it. So we have to find ways to, like, renovate your house. You got to take it on one project at a time. You can't go spend $500,000 putting in new bathrooms and kitchens, right, all at once. So we'll get there. We know where we need to be. I don't think there's anybody. Well, there might be some people in our sport who say, hey, this is good enough. I don't think good enough should ever be in a marketing person's vocabulary. It's never good enough. You can always do better.
And we are certainly hoping that we can continue that trend. Now, all right, Bob, let me ask you a couple of questions rapid fire here. What's it like working with Tim Wilkerson? I see him as a leader. I got the opportunity to be on the top end. He's jumping out of the car, barking directions and orders to these young kids, keeping them motivated, kind of felt like a quarterback out there, telling them what to do, when to do it, knew every man's job, what they should be doing at the moment. I really, not that I needed more, but got more respect for him as a leader, as a quarterback. What's it like you working with Tim?
I've been lucky in that regard. I've been doing this for like 17 years, and the first 12 were with Del Worsham, and the last 5 with Tim Wilkerson. Two of the greatest guys in the sport to work for and to know. I'm just extraordinarily fortunate to have worked with these two guys. Tim is one of a kind. And you use the football analogy. I'm going to tell you what he is. He's the team owner. He's the head coach. He's the general manager, and he's the quarterback all at once. And people ask me, is he low maintenance? He seems like he's real low maintenance. I said, no, that's not the right term. He's no maintenance. I usually have to beg him to delegate because he's so used to doing everything. Fortunately, he instantly, when he offered me a job, when the CSK deal went away and we had to fold our team, Timmy offered me a job, and I tell this too, let me digress a little bit. All during the times I was with Dell, my wife, Barbara, would ask me, if Dell decided not to race anymore, who else out here would you want to work for? I said, well, yeah, there's a bunch of good guys, but this Wilkerson cat seems to be the one I'd like to work for. He seems like the best guy out here. He's a cool dude. And, you know, we announced that, you know, the CSK deal was going away and Dell was going to go to Allen-Avi, and Timmy's wife, Krista, walked right up to me under the tower. I believe we were in Dallas. And she just whispered, just don't accept anything until we talk to you. I said, okay. And Timmy offered me a job within days. And I was like, how lucky can you be that the one guy you said you want to work for the most was the first one to offer you a job. So, anyway, back to Tim. He's all those things. And he's just a joy to work for. He's not a yeller. I mean, when he gets mad, he gets quiet a little bit and he gets over it immediately. He's great at that. If we lose a round in the most frustrating way, by the time he tows the car back and gets up into the lounge, 5 minutes later, it's done. Why is it done? Because it's over. And you know, sitting there stewing over it isn't going to do you any good. And he's got a great way of doing that. And that, the guys learn from that. And I learn from that. And, that's what's the best about him. He's really, really talented. He can be playful like a little kid. He's hilarious. But he's so focused, that he's just a remarkable guy. I'm very, very fortunate to have the opportunity to work with him.
A lot of people really would like to see what Tim would be capable of with a large budget. Maybe not larger, because everyone's budget could be larger. I mean large, like equivalent or close to the bigger teams out there. Is that something you think about?
Yeah, sure we do. We think about it. We don't waste a lot of time thinking about it, because we're in, you know, like I said, you live in the present. And we're always out there looking, you know, for other marketing partners and ways to step everything up. The truth is, you know, we don't need a bigger budget. I shouldn't say that. We always could use a bigger budget, just like you just said. But the fact that our team owner and our crew chief and our driver are all the same guy saves us, I don't know, you could say that, you could reasonably say that saves us $500,000 to three quarters, depending on what your crew chief and your team owner want to take out of it and how much your driver wants to be paid. And the three guys that do that on our team don't get paid. He has another business at home. That's how he keeps the lights on and keeps a roof over his family's head and keeps everybody fed. So the race car is a passion for him. We never finish the year with, you know, we almost run it like a nonprofit, because it is. It's a nonprofit business. But you don't want to, when you're in racing, if you don't win the championship and you finish the year with $100,000 in the bank, well, that's a mistake. You should have spent it. You know, because you didn't win the championship. So that's how we run. We spend every penny, but we spend them all incredibly wisely. And he's the guy that leads by example, and we all follow suit. And he's just an incredible guy who's, I think, you know, a real one of a kind.
We certainly enjoy having Tim on the show. Bob Wilbur with us here on WFO Radio. Now, Bob, last week we talked a little bit about your baseball career, and then Alan Reinhart forwarded me a blog post that you wrote from 2011 that is up on the Perfect Game Foundation's website, maybe in some other places as well, but we put it on our Facebook page last week. The best team you never heard of, talking a little bit about your personal experience playing against the United States baseball team, Team USA, and how you were able to go into their house with your team, the Sojay Wizards. Tell me about that. But most importantly, we're encouraging people to read it.
Yeah, well, my family does have a charity that we run in kind of in honor of our wonderful parents who are no longer with us. And it's called the Perfect Game Foundation. And the mission of the foundation is, my brother Dell and I kind of immediately recognized that a lot of the great things that have happened to us in our lives are because of our last name, because people knew my dad, and he was extremely well liked, and he was a major leaguer, and that opens doors. And the kid across the street might be just as talented as me and want to be in the business of baseball as a scout or a talent evaluator or a general manager, but, you know, his last name's Phillips and no one's ever heard of him, and it's hard to get your foot in the door. So that's the short version of what the foundation does. We work with major league teams, and we help aspiring young people of diverse backgrounds get that foot in the door. And our job is to get the door open, get them an internship, and then it's on them. They can either fail or succeed, but our job is to get them in the door they couldn't knock down, just being one of a million. And they apply to us and tell their story, and we help them, as many as we can. Our website, the Perfect Game Foundation website, on there I write my blog, Bob on Baseball, and it's very different than my NHRA blog. I don't write it as often, but the stories are kind of longer and richer, and I've been writing it for a number of years now. It's been a really rewarding thing to write. The one particular blog installment you're talking about is this team I played for after my professional career was over. I played a couple years of minor league baseball for the Tigers and the Oakland A's. They kindly asked me to take my talents elsewhere outside the game of professional baseball. But the Toronto Blue Jays then offered me a job as a scout, and I did that for 4 years. And once I was done with that and wanting to get on with sports marketing, I had a chance to play again. And it just so happened that a bunch of guys I knew in the St. Louis area, a couple of guys I played college ball with, were on this team. And we had seven guys on the team who were ex-pros, one ex-big leaguer, an infielder by the name of Neil Fiala, got a cup of coffee in the big leagues with the Cardinals and the Reds. And here we were, and a couple of great ex-college players, and we just wanted to play. We all had jobs. We weren't, it was the epitome of doing it for the love of the game. In the little town of Sauge, which is right across the river from the Arch in St. Louis, Rich Sauge built us a ballpark, got us started, and geez, I played on that team for close to 10 years, and we'd play as many as 75 games a summer just because we loved it. And that's all the guys on the team working full-time jobs, traveling, trying to get back to the games on time. As it turned out, those were my greatest days in baseball. I was a late bloomer, unfortunately. In pro ball, I never hit a home run, and I would hit 15 to 20 a year for those, for that team, and I just kind of was a late bloomer, but that made it much more enjoyable. I was the league MVP one year and really felt like I was playing the best ball of my life. Before I joined the team, I was working for my brother Dell and his sports marketing company, and one of our clients was USA Baseball, the Olympic and National Baseball Team organization. And I was in a meeting with them one time, I don't know where we were, in Detroit, and we were talking about their schedule for the next year, and kind of jokingly I said, hey, I'm on a pretty good team, why don't you put us on the schedule? And I really was kind of kidding, because, I mean, their schedule looks like Cuba, 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 Japan, 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 you know, it's all the other big-time national teams. And they said, sure, we got an open slot. So I'm like, oh, what have I gotten myself into here? And we went down there to Millington, Tennessee at the time with their home stadium. A whole bunch of guys off that USA team went on to play in the big leagues. Jeremy Burnett, Fernando Vina, there's a long list of guys that were on. Pat Boone was on that team. It was a really, really good team. And we went down there to play them. We got in the night before and watched them beat whoever they played the day before 27-7 or something. They just killed them. And we are looking at each other like, if we can get out of this alive, you know, that's going to be a real feather in our caps. And we beat them. We just played the game of our lives, and we played our game, and they played well, and son of a gun, we beat them. And one of the highlights of my entire baseball career was that night. I happened to go 2-for-3 with a three-run homer that kind of won the game for us, and it was just magic. It was really, really neat to play in their stadium and beat the team that has USA on their shirts. It was a real highlight.
Screenplay.
You got it. I'm working on it.
Yeah, I think this is one that'll work. Do they have something like this in hockey? Except this is real, and we know you. I love it. I'll tell you what. It was a great story. I suggest everybody check it out. Perfect Game Found.org, and the best team you never heard of. It's up on our Facebook page as well. What a cool story! So you think Yankees?
Cool. I appreciate that.
You think the Yankees were right by letting Robinson Cano go?
You know, they had a. It's not like the Yankees to draw a line and say that's all we want to spend. But there's reasons, and sometimes the reasons aren't what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years. It's what's going to happen 6 years from now. At that point, are you spending boatloads of money for a guy who's not producing like he did when you gave him the contract? And they're pretty smart guys there in the Bronx. You know, they didn't want all these World Series for nothing. So that was their choice. If he wanted to come back at the figure they wanted, they'd have signed him, and it would have been a lot of money. But the Mariners, I think, were looking in the mirror and saying, the Seahawks are great. The Sounders soccer team fills the Seahawks stadium. We're kind of almost irrelevant here in Seattle. What are we going to do? And they just opened up the bank and said, let's go get whoever we can get. And they sure have made themselves relevant overnight.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I do hear that the soccer team up there is actually capturing the hearts of everybody, especially the young people out there. And, of course, the Seahawks are huge. It should be interesting. Definitely had to apply some of your knowledge to my personal team. Bob, thank you so much for coming on the show. I love having these conversations, especially during the cold season, giving our listeners a chance to get to know a little bit better what's going on behind the scenes, the people who make the sport of drag racing what it is. Don't be surprised if someone shouts WFO your way next time you're at the track. Hopefully they will. And I do thank you for coming on the show.
It's been a lot of fun. I always talk like I get paid by the word, so I hope I wasn't too windy, and it was a lot of fun to do it. I hope somebody at least got a little bit out of it.
That's why we're on the internet, because we can go for as long as we want.
There you go.
No such thing as too long on the internet. Bob, thank you so much. Have a happy holiday, and appreciate you coming on WFO Radio.
You too, Joe. I'll see you soon.
Bob Wilbur with us here on WFO Radio, and how about that? He's out there hitting jacks. He didn't mention in the story. You got to read the story. I don't want to ruin all the whole story. And what I get out of the whole thing, a couple of different angles, since it is the tail end of the show, and I always like to drop a couple different of my own personal opinions out there. One, how important is the internet that this story that Bob wrote in 2011, I'm unaware of it, 2011, what do I know? I missed it? Did I read it and not remember it? I don't know. But I missed it. I didn't get it. First time around. And 2012 and 2013, I missed it too. Here we're on the verge of 2014. His name comes up. Alan mentions it. He emails me the story. The link is still active. And now it's getting new life. So what does that mean? Well, first of all, it's a lesson to all of us out there who do anything that we want people to know about to prepare for this. Prepare for this. That's why race teams and racers and local racers and everybody should work on making sure that their websites and everything is constantly updated or at very least evergreen. This is an evergreen story. This is a story that people can stumble upon over and over again for years and years. It's a great little story. That's number one. And that's what I hope happens with the WFO Radio Archive. I'm really hoping that drag racing fans are listening to the show for the very first time and saying to themselves, wow, I never knew about this show. Is there more? Can I hear more between now and next week when you do another one? And the answer is yes, there is an archive on WFOradio.com. You can go back years, or on the app, you can go back this season and listen to everything. While you're at work, you're on the go, you're mobile in your car, you can check it out, you can listen and see what the drivers and crew chiefs and personalities in the NHRA Mellow Yellow Series thought about when certain things happened over the course of the year. I feel like it gives a much better understanding of what's happening and why it's happening. Tim Wilkerson was on the show several times. But here during the cold months and the off season, and of course, my apologies to everyone that lives in like frozen areas. Reinhardt's in Arizona. I'm in sunny, beautiful South Florida where it's 74 degrees. It's just natural that we are happy to be avoiding the cold, avoiding it. And what I would say is, hey, I got a realtor on staff, Giovanni Miami. That's his real job. And we would be happy to put you together. But I digress. Spending time in the WFO Radio app, great way to kill a little time while you're at work and find out more about the personalities that make the sport of drag racing. Bob Wilbur, coming out of other sports, has the baseball background, likes the Robinson Cano deal. I think a lot of the Yankee fans do too. Didn't really like the way Robbie Cano kind of fired some shots walking out the door. And I know most of the drag racing fans aren't necessarily Yankee fans, but I also know a whole bunch of them that are. So we've got a new team for next year, which is a good thing. Cannot wait. Well, that's going to do it. What do I take out of this episode of the show? Well, I'm very bummed that I missed the PRI show. Very bummed. But it was completely the right thing to do, given the week that I had. So, unfortunate, but a good thing. Two, lots of changes in the world of drag racing. Lots of things going down, stories that are percolating out there that aren't quite yet ready for consumption. Things that people are hearing about, stories that are out there that are going to be pretty interesting. So I'm looking forward to hearing if the rumors are true. We don't discuss a lot of rumors on the show because there's so many. We could definitely get off track. I like to just wait for it to unfold and then talk about it. Questions for Reinhardt. Questions for me. 954-889-6796. Light it up anytime, day or night. Guest suggestions. Email them. joe@wforadio.com or on Twitter. Either way, I'm very happy to whatever your guest suggestions are. If you've got a suggestion for someone you think should be on the show, like this guy this week wanted Bob Wilbur, boom, we tried to make it happen. And that's where we are. It's kind of like the path of least resistance. Meaning, if you come up with an idea and I can make it happen and you want to hear it, that's what I'm going to try to do because we want to keep you guys happy. And one final thought, always remember the way that the most people have found out about this show, as much as I do things on Twitter and Facebook and try to get the word out there, is person to person. We've got some really hardcore listeners out there. Great guys who are sharing the show and retweeting the show, but most importantly, telling their racer friends and race fan friends, listen to these guys. Check them out, because on Tuesdays for NHRA Nitro, and of course people are listening whenever they want, you can hear the stars of the NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing Series and drag racing. And then our Ignition show is more of a sports radio show with a motorsports theme. We have a lot of fun on there, and apparently robots, drones, and futuristic technology that will eventually lead to Skynet has kind of taken over. Everyone on the show seems to fear Skynet, which I agree. And if you don't know Skynet, I can't help you. Just sit at home. And that's going to do it. Big thanks to Alan Reinhardt, of course, for coming on the show, giving a little breakdown of PRI, answering questions. Big thanks to Brad Plord for coming on. I always learn a lot. These guys don't realize that I'm a bracket racer at some level. Somewhere in the back of my brain, I think that I'm hopefully going to apply some of this information at some point against my local racers. And a big thanks to Bob Wilbur for coming on the show and calling it like he sees it. I like the fact he's like, these are just my opinions. And yes, that is the deal. Nobody's in official capacity. Big thanks to everyone who came on the show, all of you listeners out there. Thank you so much for listening and participating, sharing the show, and keep checking back. We're going to be back with another show next week. Yes, believe it or not, Christmas Eve, we will post a show of some sort. Ignition, not so much, maybe. But we want to make sure you have your fix, your Nitro fix, here on WFO Radio. That's going to do it. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week right here on WFO Radio.
The views and opinions of the hosts, guests, or callers do not necessarily reflect that of the station ownership, advertisers, or agencies.